Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. I'm David Hudson Tuthill, assistant editor of Redefined. In this episode, Ron Matus, director of policy and public affairs for Step Up for Students, speaks with Pastor Robert Ward, founder of Mount Moriah Christian Fundamental School in the south side of St. Petersburg, Florida. If anybody doubts the passion for education choice in Black communities, come visit Mount Moriah and chat with Pastor Ward. Pastor Ward started the school in 2011 with 3 students. Now it has 56 and is routinely unable to serve children because of wait lists, both for the school and for the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship for lower income students. All but one of the students at Mount Moriah is Black. Perhaps it's no surprise, given that the outcomes in the district that encompasses St. Petersburg are especially bleak for Black students. This interview took place on the campus of Mount Moriah in late December 2018. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the interview.
Well, Pastor Ward, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. We know between being a pastor and being the director of a school, you have a lot to do, obviously, so we're grateful that you found a little bit of time to share your thoughts with us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure, and I appreciate even the opportunity to be able to do so, to reach a larger community, to at least hear and understand our perspective of it.
I wanted to start off with the fact that you have long been concerned. You've been very vocal and very public about your concern with the plight of Black students in public schools. So I wanted to ask you if you could tell us a little bit more about your concern, the nature of your concerns, and how that ties into the fact that just a few years ago you founded Mount Moriah School.
Well, certainly, I grew up in the community of Southside St. Pete, which is predominantly a Black community in Midtown, and I'm a product of public schools, and so it's not the issue of being against public schools in any way. But when we look at the numbers, the statistics of what's actually happening today with our students or in our community is that we have such a high rate of kids not being able to read at grade level, not being able to do math at grade level. And we know those are kind of like the foundations of the learning process to take you through the entire time of learning, or even out of the secondary schools on into the college level. And mm-hmm. If you can't read, certainly you can't go forward with other subjects. And so my concern was that we as a community need to try to do something to make a difference. And so that was part of the reason why I wanted to start a school here in Mount Moriah, was to at least give our parents an option, a choice, because obviously for some and too many really, the public school system is failing them. And sometimes we can't go with the mindset that one size fits all, because it's just not true. Different cultures, a different environment, different people learn in different ways. And sometimes you have to recognize that, accept it. It may not be ideal in how we want to think about a community, wishing that everybody could just have the same thing, learn in the same way, develop at the same speed, but that's just not reality. And so they need options, and parents are crying out for options, to an alternative, because all they care about is their kids. They want their kids to succeed. They want them to grow. They want them to learn. They want them to survive and be a model citizen one day. And so we work to for that same end. And so my goal was to at least try to do something to make a difference in our community, to give the parents an alternative to the learning process for their child. And so 7 years ago, I decided that we would try to start a school here at Mount Moriah that would offer parents a different environment, a different culture, a different way of learning for their child. Okay. Because some kids need a little bit more attention. They need a smaller classroom size. They need to learn through different methods, but get the same end result.
I wanted to ask you a little more about Mount Moriah in a little bit, and also ask you a little bit more about the community's views on options. But for the moment, I want to just stay a little bit on the subject of mm-hmm. Black students in public schools. And clearly, you're not the only one who share those concerns. There was just an article in the paper this morning on the front page that was about this subject, and the headline was "Closing the Gap in Black Learning we can't rely on the Pinellas schools, black leaders say, end quote. Which is a really striking headline, and the only thing that made me pause was this idea that this is what black leaders are saying. It's broader than that, isn't it? It's not just black leaders who have that concern.
No, I think it's the community at large, and probably the greatest group that has the concern would be actually the parents. They want their kids to succeed. They want them to learn. They want them to have the same opportunities of learning that other communities and other cultures have. And so I think that's who probably we represent them in many ways. Sometimes black leaders or in the community is simply their voice. But we're hearing actually their cry and their plight. I hear it even within my own congregation, within my own community. And those of us who focus on community concerns, one of the main things we do is go to the community, the grassroots of the community, to hear their concern and their cry. And then when we look at the numbers actually speak for themselves. They cry out too, because they show us what's actually truly happening in this process.
Well, I wanted to bring that up real quick, just to pause to give the readers and listeners just a little more context mm-hmm. about the particular situation here in South St. Pete in Pinellas County. As the article pointed out, there is a huge gap between black student achievement and white student achievement in Pinellas County, which many of us would find unconscionable enough.
Absolutely.
But beyond that, there's also this gap between black student performance in Pinellas compared to black student performance in virtually every other urban district in Florida. In other words, black students in Pinellas do far worse than even other black students elsewhere in Florida. And this is not a new thing. The trend lines go back to when the schools were the most integrated they ever were under the court order. This goes back to when the schools were the best funded they ever were before the Great Recession. And so the article touched on some of that, but it didn't get into that enough, I don't think, so people understand the full context and the urgency here. Obviously, the community here, this is no secret. People have known this for decades. And so the question I have for you is, it's been that bad for that long. Why does it persist?
Well, I think it, in my opinion anyway, it persists because there's not the proper focus in terms of what the real need is. Again, it goes back to that one size fits all mentality or approach to the learning process. And unfortunately, that's just not reality. One size does not fit all. Students come from different backgrounds, different environments, different problems, different issues that all have an effect on how we behave, how we learn, how we feel in the learning process. So I think we have to take all of that into consideration. And I think we have to also establish an environment where parents feel there's hope. They feel that, you know, it's not that we're asking them to be more lenient in the sense of accepting the requirements of learning. Because we don't change that. The requirements of learning, the disciplines of learning remain the same. But just like with our school, we consider ourselves still a fundamental school, which means that we still have mandatory requirements, rules, expectations from the parent, because it is a team effort. And I don't believe that parents don't want to be involved, that they don't care enough about their child's education and future that they don't want to be involved. I just think sometimes they lose hope, they lose cooperation. Sometimes the process is more difficult for them, especially even in the process of integration of schools. It made it more difficult for parents to really do a part of what they need to do in terms of being involved with their child's learning process.
Because all of a sudden they were part of a school that was far away.
Absolutely, their school is no longer down the street. Mm-hmm. Some parents have difficulty when it comes to transportation, and so they can't get involved as deeply as they would like to. Sometimes they can't even allow their kid to be involved in certain activities that are after school because now they miss the bus. Who's gonna pick them up? How am I gonna get there? So all of those things play a part of the change in our local schools and in a sense failing.
I think you started to answer the next question I had, which is, why are you a school choice guy? I mean, you know, you are a supporter of educational choice. Your school has a lot of school choice scholarship kids, and you mentioned the one-size-fits-all thing, but that we have to move away from that. Is that your main reason for supporting choice? And are there any other reasons? I mean, how did you come to this position?
I support it because I care about kids succeeding, and I care about parents having an alternative to their child succeeding and getting educated. Because if something is not working, then I believe we all like choice. We like variety. We like to be able to say, well, okay, this doesn't fit my child. This doesn't work. Is there something else? Mm-hmm. And it's sad when if your child is not succeeding in the public school system and not doing well in a particular type of environment, that you're stuck or forced to be there when that automatically is, in a sense, like a guarantee that your child is going to fail. And so parents says, to me, parents say, is there something else? Is there another way? That environment doesn't work for my child. I know my child. And so I think it's great when you can offer an alternative to what the public school system offers. The overall goal, whether it's the public school system or school choice, is to educate the child. And we must maintain that focus. That's the goal of the parent.
Right.
They love their children. They want their children educated. They want to be a part of the educational process. And I think school choice gives them the freedom and also the ability to fulfill their dream and their hopes for their child.
Right.
And I'm hearing the voice of the community. And our doors are being flooded, the hope that they can get into this school.
Well, hold that thought. I want to get there in a second because that's a really fascinating piece to this. But as I understand it, if I could just backtrack to the history of the school for a little bit. So as I understand, when you started 2011, you had just a handful of students, and now you have 56?
That's correct.
And virtually all of them are attending with the assistance of some kind of school choice or educational choice scholarship, is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. 98%.
Okay. And then virtually all your students are Black.
That is correct.
Okay. Here's why I bring that up. There are some people in the school choice realm who are opponents of school choice who would hear that and say there's a problem with that. They would say, that sounds like resegregation. That doesn't sound like the most effective way to have a school. Schools that are predominantly or Black or Hispanic, that's not the recipe for success. What would you say to them?
Well, I would disagree. It's certainly not the recipe for failure. Mm-hmm. It's just a different way or a different approach. And when you start talking about this particular, at least our particular school being 100% Black, well, we're located in the Black community. And so naturally, that's where people go, to where they feel it's an easier process for them. Again, it's more convenient. It's better for the parents. We have a little bit more flexibility in terms of assisting the parents to set up meetings, tutoring. All of those things fit the parent overall process of teaching or getting their children educated.
You're very much a neighborhood school, a community school.
We are, and we're in the Black community. So it doesn't surprise me or shock me at all that our students will be Black students or Hispanic students. That's just a natural process of where you live.
Well, so is there any reason why having a school that's predominantly Black would mean that you can't be successful?
Not at all. It's all about the application. It's all about the academic process. It's all about your curriculum and your process of teaching. Again, you have the opportunity in a smaller classroom environment to even get to know a child better, to understand what's missing, to understand better what's the right approach for that particular student. We have a lot of programs that assist students that may need more time, that may need a different environment. And so, you know, we offer the same type of curriculum, such as, you know, the Abbott curriculum,
right,
or the Becca curriculum. So it's not that we change the importance of the curriculum, because the curriculum is important, and that's what we teach. And then, of course, we have teachers who have a heart to and a patience with children and their particular issues that they bring into the school. Of course, we don't get perfect students.
Pastor, talk to us a little bit about the supply and demand going on here. When we were talking the other day, you said if somehow you had enough money and you could build a bigger Mount Moriah for 300 kids, you could probably fill that up in a snap.
The supply.
Were you joking?
No, I wasn't joking at all. The supply and demand is outrageous. Our community of parents are beating on our doors to get in our school. We actually have stretched even our level of comfort in terms of capacity to try to turn away as few parents as possible. But we're very limited in our capacity. We have to maintain a certain classroom size, a certain safety standard of students in the building. So we have to stay within those regulations and guidelines. But if we had more space,
right,
it would be filled.
Okay.
We have a waiting list that's huge. So they want this. It's not that the parents don't want it, because if they didn't want it, they wouldn't be knocking on our doors. It wouldn't be such a long backlog or waiting list to get in. So it's something that the community and the parents want for their child.
Talk to us a little bit more about those parents who wanted in but couldn't get in. So it was my understanding that some of them could not get in because there weren't enough scholarships to go around.
That is absolutely true.
Well, tell me, if you don't mind, and describe to our listeners some of the reaction was from the parents when they couldn't get a scholarship and thus could not get into your school. What happened?
Some of them cried, really, with the loss of hope for their child. Because
you mean on the phone or here? Or
actually here, as they sat in our lobby and was told the news. Because what we do also is we try to help them through the process of applying and qualifying. And when they discover the news that there are no more scholarships, that there's a waiting list even for them to be considered through the application process, and they then look at the alternative, that means I have to take my child back to a place where I don't believe my child fits well. And that's always devastating and you know, just disheartening to a parent when you're forced to put your child in a place where you just know what the outcome is going to be for them.
Essentially, unfortunately, it was up to you guys to break the news to them that they couldn't get in here and they may have run out of options.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And certainly it breaks our heart to have to turn away parents for whatever the reason is, because their goal and their fight is save my child.
Right.
All they want to do is save their children. Save my child. Right now my child is failing. Right now my child can't read, or my child can't fit, or my child is having this issue in a system. Not saying that system is bad. It's because I came out of it.
It works for many.
It worked for all of my children went through it, and they are successful. They have master's degrees. They went on to, so it's not that it's a bad system. It's just a system that just doesn't necessarily fit every child. And when there is choice, it allows them to say, okay, I recognize, I accept the fact that I'm not condemning that process or that setting, but I do recognize that it's just not the right one for my child. And all I care about is the success in the education of my child. And so when you give parents that option and that ability, it frees up their spirit and their heart. It gives them hope. They light up because they say, oh, you know, here's a place of hope. And I have the power to choose it. And so that's amazing. That's important to them, and they go in that direction.
This interview is about you and your views, but I'll share a quick story with you. The first couple of years I was at Step Up, I used to take all the emails and letters that I got from parents and post them on my office wall, and I had scores of them, even though I was not a parent liaison. They simply were so filled with gratitude that they got a scholarship, that they would go to the website and find my name and email because they just wanted to thank somebody.
Yes.
And they would write me these notes and thank me, and they were this most moving. I'll puddle up in a second if I talk about it too much, so I'll stop real quick. But it just shows that level of lighting up, as you describe it. They were just so overjoyed that they didn't feel trapped anymore, and they didn't feel desperate anymore, that they had an option and some hope, that they would write this stranger, me, this letter to thank me.
Well, and, you know, and there was a few years back, Ron, that we, you know, we thought we would have to close our school because we just didn't, at that time, the funding wasn't working for us, wasn't enough to really run the school and keep it open. And so we thought we would have to shut down. And I met with the parents along with the principal and was giving them the news that it's very possible that we may have to shut down. And those parents reacted in a way that I never expected.
What'd they do?
They cried out and said, "Oh no, you can't shut down." What they said, you have been the only hope and the only success for my child. You've been what has worked for my child. I don't want my child to go back to the public school system. I want them to stay here. Please, please don't shut down." And so they said to me as a group of parents, "What can we do to help make the school work, make it stay open, because my child is succeeding. It has changed. Their attitude has changed. Their spirit of learning has changed. Their grades have changed. And I don't want it to go back to the way it was." And so they pooled together, wow, put their resources together to get us through that hump. And we were able then to restructure some things and refocus some things and be able to stay open as a school. And we've been running full steam ahead ever since. But it was the parents who cried out that made me say, "Okay, let's fight together. Let's keep the school open because I see how vital it is to you and the community." And so that's what we did.
That's really powerful. That says a lot. If I can pivot to this one last little area. Mm-hmm. Which is the politics of educational choice. So I hope I'm not spilling the beans here, but you're a Democrat?
Yes, I'm a registered Democrat.
Okay, you're a registered Democrat.
I'm not ashamed of that.
Well, you're a proud Democrat. You're a social justice Democrat. Our listeners should know that you have several images of President Obama on the walls of your office here.
Absolutely.
Well, I bring this up for this reason. This is why I think it's important. The widespread perception about educational choice is that it's somehow a right-wing, a conservative, a Republican policy. Is it?
No. It shouldn't be. Because it's not about us as individuals in terms of our political position. It should always be nonpartisan when we start dealing with what's required and needed to educate our kids. Our kids are not Republicans. Our kids are not Democrats, independents, or liberals. Our kids are kids. When I was a child growing up in the public school system, I didn't know anything about politics. I didn't care. I didn't know whether my parents were a Democrat or a Republican or whatever. I was a child. And even as a, you know, my mother never focused, or my mother and father never focused me on a political position in terms of education. They simply focused me on the importance of education, and that I need education to have a future and be successful. And so it's not what it should be in terms of, you know, our political position, but whether we are Democrat or Republican. We should just care about our children, because that's all parents really, that's their position. They just care about their children.
Well, Pastor Ward, this was great. We really appreciate you giving us all this time, and I have no doubt we're going to have readers and listeners all over the place who are really going to appreciate your insights on all this stuff. So thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.